Hello, welcome to Conservation Connections with Valley Stewardship Network. My name is Beth Summers, and I'm the executive director at Valley Stewardship Network, a conservation nonprofit based here in Viroqua, Wisconsin. And I'm here in the studio today with Skye Bruce, who is our ecological monitoring and native planting coordinator, and then also Dave Creer, who recently retired from the same position as a native planting specialist. So really excited to talk to you all today about the prairie planting program that we've had at Valley Stewardship Network and the progress we've made so far and opportunities for area landowners to get some native plantings on their land. So welcome, Skye.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
And Dave, thanks for having us in the studio. Dave's also our sound engineer.
Yes, thank you. I got two hats on today.
So I'm really just excited to be celebrating a major milestone with our prairie plantings at Valley Stewardship, that we've achieved the 100-acre mark, and we're actually moving past that mark. But much of that was achieved through the work that Dave did in his time at VSN, and also through the hard work of Tom Lukens, who did much of that as a volunteer. So
yeah,
congratulations on that 100-acre milestone.
Thanks. It was a good milestone. I finally hit it, so I could retire. It was a lot of work from a lot of people and a lot of different funding sources. And I got to say, just fantastic to work with a huge range of landowners in the area, you know, whether they're farmers or recreational land or whatever, to be able to put prairie on people's lands.
Yeah, such a cool program. And we've been so lucky to have interested landowners, both farmers who are interested in putting prairie strips on their land, recreational landowners, businesses, even, you know, people with smaller acreages putting in prairie planting. So really across the map, we've had a lot of interest. So what a great opportunity that we're able to provide seed through a donation-based fund that we have, and staff support, and then just ongoing advice to landowners on how to keep maintaining that prairie. So we'll kind of get into all those different components here. But Skye, maybe you can kick us off with talking a little bit about why it's so important to put native plants on our landscape locally.
Oh, what a great question. Well, we live in an area of the Midwest that used to have a lot of tallgrass prairie. We no longer have that tallgrass prairie in our landscapes, and there are a lot of species of insects, animals, plants that we no longer really have in our landscapes as prevalently. And so if we are thinking about restoring area to prairie and getting more prairie plants on the landscape, we can create habitat for that wildlife and maybe bring some of that wildlife back. And this is really critical for human health if we think about things like pollination. Creating habitat for pollinators specifically allows for those pollinator populations to thrive, and we depend on those pollinators to bring many of our vegetables to, you know, fruition and be able to harvest those veggies. It's all about connecting the dots in terms of the ecosystem, but it really comes back to human health too. And it's just great to see, you know, the biodiversity coming back to the landscape. I think when I see a strip of prairie or a prairie restoration take place, it brings a lot of joy to me, and I see it in communities in general. Being able to enjoy that type of landscape is huge.
Yeah, and thinking about how native plants support pollinators, you know, everyone has flower gardens and vegetable gardens around their house, but why is it not enough just to plant flowers from other continents and expect that to sustain our pollinators? Why do we need native plants specifically?
Yeah, well, other than, you know, just the baseline importance of increasing and maintaining biodiversity, native plants have evolved with our native pollinators and other wildlife for millennia. And so they've evolved these really specific relationships where, you know, you can think of butterflies and their host plants. The biggest and most recognizable relationship there is monarchs and milkweed. And these are two species that have evolved together. And, you know, monarchs require milkweed in order to be able to complete their life cycle. And so when we think about monarchs or other butterfly species and some bees too, they have specially developed relationships with these native plant species. And they can't do that without those native plant species existing on the landscape. While they can, you know, nectar from various flowers and vegetables we have in our gardens, sometimes there's these really specifically developed relationships between a plant species and an insect species in particular that they can't exist without it. So we need to be supporting that full life cycle development and bringing, you know, the habitat onto the landscape to make sure that we can have that full circle moment and continue to support those populations in a more holistic way.
Yeah, and pollinators have really declined in recent years, haven't they? So it's becoming more and more of a conservation concern and an agricultural concern as well, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we hear about a lot about this insect apocalypse that's going on. There's really, it's doom and gloom for insects right now in terms of what we're hearing for their populations. And this, you know, there's a lot of reasons for this, and it's said to be a sort of death by a thousand cuts type of thing. Habitat mm-hmm. loss is a huge one. And so if we can bring habitat back to the landscape, that's enormous for supporting those populations. But I think what also comes with restoring prairie habitat is the idea that we are not treating that prairie habitat in the same way as we're treating some of our agricultural landscapes. So we're not spraying it with pesticides or herbicides. We're letting those plants grow. You know, there is mowing or burning maintenance, but we're not cutting that prairie down in the middle of the season in order to have something else grow there. So not only are we providing that habitat, but we're also treating that habitat in a non-toxic way for those species to continue to be supported by it.
Yeah, and since you bring up habitat loss, that's not just a concern for pollinators, right? We've lost estimated 3 billion birds from North America since 1970, and a huge number of those are grassland species that would have relied on prairie originally. And so we hope to see as we restore and replant prairie in our area is an uptick in some of those grassland bird populations, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, well, you know, are there other groups too that having native vegetation benefit?
You know, I think of it as a kind of an ecological cascade where if we're supporting things like pollinators, we're supporting, you know, butterflies are caterpillars at their first level, after they come out of their eggs, but they, you know, as larvae, that is food for birds and that's mm-hmm. food for small mammals. And being able to support the habitat from that baseline level up, it continues to have a ripple effect for our entire ecosystem. So yeah, you're totally right. It's not just pollinators and beyond birds. It's lots of, you know, mammals. We have amphibians and reptiles that rely on habitat restoration, whether that's, you know, grassland or wetland restoration. But yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah. And I'd love to zoom out even a little bit more to looking at a landscape scale and how having native vegetation on the landscape benefits really our ecosystem at all levels, because especially here in our steep topographical region, we have such an issue with soil loss and erosion runoff into our local streams. Dave, maybe you can speak a little bit about what's going on below ground in a prairie that helps ameliorate some of those issues.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things that prairie land can do is it can act as a sponge for water. So when you have excessive rain, it can really hold that water and prevent it from just running straight down a hill and going straight into a stream and getting really flash floods. And the other thing it can do in a drought is slowly release that water so that in the middle of summer, many prairie plants are warm season plants, and many of our pastures and things that are created with non-native plants are cool season grasses. So if you're going to have a drought, an area that's a native prairie area can actually be green and thriving in the middle of a drought, whereas a cool season pasture area may not be doing so well. So it actually adds a huge buffer or variety for a farmer that's grazing to have some of those benefits of holding water, releasing water, having warm season and cool season growth. And prairies, because they're a perennial vegetation, so, you know, they're not harvested and you don't till up the land and plant something in new every year. It's there year after year after year. The input costs are much lower because you're not replanting it. And the roots of those prairie plants are able to release the mycorrhizomes, mm-hmm. These relationships between all these different plants underground that isn't super well known, but is becoming a lot more well known. Really facilitates the movement of nutrients between plants. And then if you have cattle grazing on it, or sheep or goats or whatever it is, they're getting those micronutrients, which they may not get from just a cool season pasture. So there's all sorts of great benefits in the soil. And for streams and surface water and lakes and ponds in the area, it's really good at preventing runoff and preventing nutrients from like nitrogen and phosphorus from going into those waters and creating algae blooms and excessive plant growth inside the streams and things like that. So native prairie upland in the upland areas before it gets down to the streams is super beneficial for our stream health here.
Yeah, isn't that a great connection to make, that something happening up on a ridgetop, somebody putting in a prairie planting way up there on the ridge might benefit stream organisms downstream, even way downstream, reducing the amount of nutrients running into the Mississippi River and ultimately the Gulf of Mexico, where we have some really big nutrient problems coming from the upper Midwest.
Yeah.
So if farmers all over the Midwest put in prairie, we could potentially even prevent some of those algal blooms that are happening in the Gulf.
Yeah.
What a neat thought that we have that cascading effect on our downstream neighbors. And we all know how important streams are for our local economy and the fisher people that come here and add to our economy by fishing. They really depend on our streams being healthy and clear and not having that runoff. So
yeah, it really is that cycle of life that you were talking about, that by putting in prairie and protecting the soil, you are literally providing food for fish miles and miles and miles downstream, as much as you're doing for the butterflies and the pollinators and the larvae and birds. And it is a very, very, almost, I don't want to call it linear because it's not, but boy, you can really put the dots together for how that supports all that life.
Yeah, and I love how you mentioned the roots and how the roots of a prairie are can get connected and the mycorrhizal activity. And I just love the visual demonstrations that I've seen of prairie roots, and they're so long. I mean, I think I saw one that was like a tall blue stem, big blue stem that was like 22 feet long. And it was just like this enormous, like fold out piece of paper. And thinking about the amount of soil that stabilizes too, is like, not only is that really long root system and other taproot systems of prairie plants able to absorb all that water and create less water just running off, but the amount of erosion that saves as well with that system. And I know that's a really big issue in this area because we have these hillsides and this topography where there's, you know, we have lots of bluffs and, you know, areas with lots of erosion if we're not taking care of that land.
I'm curious if either of you can speak about having that sponge on your land. Say that you're a farmer or someone with livestock or someone with crops. Dave, you mentioned that it could be an alternate area to come and graze livestock. So building resilience onto farms is a big benefit. Do you believe that there's a benefit to adjacent crops by having those sort of water sponges there next to cropland?
Yeah, I mean, I do. Do you think so too?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, if you have that sort of buffer land, you're keeping that water on your land and keeping it from running off. And allowing, you know, that area to have less erosion is hugely beneficial. So, yeah, I think it can be good for crops. I think it can be good for grazing. You know, you mentioned having that assurance. If you have a time of drought and your pasture maybe isn't doing as well, and if you have a prairie strip that you could graze, that's a possibility. I think that there's a distinction to be made in terms of grazing prairie. For example, if you have a remnant prairie, if it's not a restored prairie, I wouldn't graze a remnant prairie, but I think there's a lot to be said for having the kind of fail safe of a prairie strip and being able to graze it. Yeah, it's a really cool opportunity for grassland where we have, you know, we protect it and we take care of that type of grassland, but it also can be woven into a working land type of scenario. So yeah, it's very cool. And there's some great farmers doing that around here.
And I think what it's an important distinction to make the difference between a remnant prairie, which we have this wonderful group here, the prairie enthusiasts who work to preserve existing prairie remnants that are kind of the original prairie, but very few of those are actually on the landscape. And what we're talking about here is a little different from that. We're talking about establishing areas of prairie plantings, and, you know, we try to get them as diverse as we can for the amount of money available, but it's never really going to be quite the same, is it, from an original remnant?
Yeah, I should clarify, you know, when we talk about remnant prairies, these are areas of prairie and a grassland that have never been turned into anything else. So they've never been tilled up and cultivated. These are areas of grassland that have existed for a long, long time and been maintained as grassland, and specifically tallgrass prairie, for millennia, instead of, you know, the types of prairie restorations we're talking about with prairie strips, where maybe they've been in agriculture for a while. Maybe they're taken out of agricultural production because perhaps they're less prime farmland, or just perhaps the farmer wants to see more a prairie strip on their land. But either way, it's a restored prairie instead of a remnant prairie. And yeah, they have different characteristics in terms of soil communities, especially, and plant communities. So.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about prairie strips, we're kind of referring back to some work that was done through Iowa State University, right, on agricultural lands, where they're planting strips of prairie along the contours of the landscape and in field edges or less productive areas, sort of as a tool for holding in that soil and water and nutrients. And, you know, that's a wonderful tool in an agricultural setting, but there are plenty of other ways that prairie can be planted too, right? Like people who have land that they just want to see in native plants could put a whole field in that, and we've done some of that at VSN. How do you feel about the ability of people with smaller yards in town? Is there value in having small little patches of native plantings?
Oh, yeah, I'd say so for sure. It really depends on which species you're trying to, in terms of if you're talking about pollinators, which species you're trying to support. But there are absolutely benefits to creating small little patchwork postal stamp prairies. I like to call them micro prairies. And I've created a few of those, and I think that they can be really valuable, not only for supporting our native pollinators and other native wildlife species, birds, small mammals, but also, you know, just educating the people around you and sharing with your community what you're doing and why you're doing it. It can be a really awesome tool for community engagement, to talk to the people around you and people who might pass by your yard. Some people like to put out little signs on their native prairie planting. The Xerces Society, for example, offers some of these, but there's lots of organizations that'll put a little sign out, and you can customize it even. But talking to people about this and showing people, you know, there's some really cool species that you can just plant in your yard that are really home landscaping friendly.
Mm. And having that signage can be so nice, too, because for those of us that are used to seeing uniform green lawn, sometimes it can be a little startling to see something that's a little more unkempt. And we've seen, especially in our first year or two of new planting, sometimes they don't always look like much until they really get well established. And then they start to get really gorgeous and all the flowers are colorful and beautiful. But maybe the first year, your neighbors, depending on what kind of neighbors you have, might benefit them to know that there's a trees and right and yeah. have a sign out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Kill Your Lawn movement. And I think, you know, if you do want something to establish faster, of course, prairie restoration, whether it's on a large scale or a small scale, it can take a while if you're planting something from seed. But if you do want something to be established a little bit faster, it's easier on a small scale to use plugs, or we call them plugs, but you can also hear them be referred to as transplants. So they're just plants that have already been started, and they come in, you know, little pots or little cells that you can pull them out and plant them. And those are sometimes even going to bloom the first year you plant them if you're planting them in the spring. And they'll certainly bloom the next year if they aren't already. So, yeah, if you're more eager to see a quicker turnaround in what your prairie is going to look like, or your pocket prairie or your micro prairie, plugs are a good mm-hmm. option, especially if you can find some in bulk. It is a little more expensive than mm-hmm. seed, but it can be really worth it in terms of instant gratification.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into kind of the process of what people can do if they're interested in getting a native planting on their land. Now, we are so fortunate at Valley Stewardship to have a donation-based fund that some of our members have contributed to in the past, and we'll be doing another drive for that here coming up in the future, where people can put their money directly into our seed fund, and that puts prairie on our landscape. So it's a great way to donate to this effort. And so for landowners that have a good situation for a prairie and are willing to do the prep work and get their land really well prepared, which means doing some serious weed removal either through organic or through herbicide methods, either whatever suits their purposes, then VSN staff can come in and plant prairie seed and give advice on how to maintain that. And so we have a really nice system by which we've been able to use those donation funds to get more prairie on the landscape.
Yeah, I think that's so phenomenal. And I think it's really cool, too, that we can help landowners choose their seed mix. If you want something that's a little bit lower growing, you know, traditional tallgrass prairie can get very, very tall. So we can help folks find the seed mix that works the best for them. If they, especially, you know, if folks want things that are going to bloom throughout the season, often, you know, native plants aren't blooming. One species isn't going to bloom through the whole season, but we can create a mix for you so that something's always in bloom. And we're always creating that, allowing for that habitat to be you know, aesthetically pleasing and good for wildlife as well.
And speaking of custom mixes, Dave, you and Tom Lukens did some work creating some custom mixes for stream bank settings too, didn't you?
Yeah, using different plants that really, as we were just saying, like to have wet roots. So when you put them right along a stream bank, they're able to grow really well in really moist situations. And so it generally is more expensive, I got to say. It's a lot of sedges, which really like wet roots. And so the seed mixes were definitely more expensive. But we had some great results. And so, and this is really talking about that first couple feet, you know, not even 10 or 15 feet away from water, but probably the first couple feet. And so getting native plants that are really holding stream banks right where the water and the soil meet. And then, you know, after 2 or 3 feet, then going maybe to a more traditional lower cost mix, either a short grass or tall grass prairie mix, still with a lot of diversity, still good for all the things we've talked about, whether it's pollinators or insects or whatever, birds. And yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. And just like Skye was saying, trying to create mixes that have something, at least several species blooming all the way from April to October, because like you say, one thing doesn't bloom for 6 months generally. And trying to find different flower types and different ways that insects can interact with the plant. Some of them have very deep areas to get down to where the nectar is going to be. Some are very shallow. Just some are really big, some are very small. Different colors, trying to make it aesthetically pleasing for us, at least, that we can see. So there's a lot of different ways to create mixes, and there's thousands of different plants. So, and of course, cost is always a consideration, so that's a part of it too. So it's actually a lot of fun to come up with seed mixes.
Yeah, and we are kind of on a learning curve ourselves as an organization where we're constantly going back and refining our process, right? And part of what Valley Stewardship Network has been diving into more in recent years is doing some ecological monitoring on some of these plantings. So looking at the bird community, the pollinator community, Dave has gotten a lot of good data on water infiltration, so how quickly and how much water the soil can absorb. And you've been able to show through that data that the prairie strips we've planted are really effective in increasing the amount of water it can infiltrate.
You mentioned Iowa State earlier, and I got to say, I mean, a college, a university, that came up with, I don't want to say, but they really developed this idea of prairie strips on farms. And they have spent decades, I would say, gathering data, coming up with processes, being able to articulate, here's the benefits, here's real data over many, many years for these different plots and different configurations of prairie strips. And it's a great resource. It's all free. You can just go to the Iowa State website and look up prairie strips. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reports to read. And of course, you go out locally here around Vernon County and you say, look at this, this is a great thing. And everybody says, oh, I totally get why that works in Iowa, but it's different here, right?
It is.
And so it was really a joy working at VSN and putting in prairie strips and actually taking data here and being able to say, but this is a guy that put this on a farm 3 miles away from here, on the same hillsides, just like you've got, the same soil types, the same, and be able to actually show improvements and benefits. So it's pretty powerful to be able to do that. And VSN actually has some great data showing that kind of stuff.
And we're really continuing to expand that, looking at soil composition, looking at the effectiveness of prairie for providing forage for livestock in times of drought when pasture might not be as available, and definitely that habitat component. So, well, and I'm glad you mentioned too that people can see examples of what we've done, because we have a couple really nice visible prairies right here in Viroqua, don't we? Sleepy Hollow Ford, if you go down there, has now mowed a trail through their little prairie planting that we worked on with them, and they have a bench you can sit on and look out over their prairie while you get your car worked on.
We started today talking about birds. Well, maybe not started, but very early on we were talking about birds. And one of the great things out at Sleepy Hollow Ford is there's dick thistles nesting in that prairie that we put out there. And they're certainly a prairie species of bird, and not super common around here. And you can go out there in the summer and you can see dick thistles nesting. It's fantastic.
Yeah, how cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, right here, pretty much in town.
Yeah.
And now another exciting new effort out at Hubbard Hills, which is open to the public. We are solarizing, so doing an organic method of weed killing by having a plastic strip out there. And that will next fall be planted.
Super excited about this project. And especially excited about the way that we're doing the site prep. As you mentioned, Beth, this is a organic method of site preparation for wildflower planting, and that is the name of the pamphlet that's put out by the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, which is another really great nonprofit. It is like the insect conservation nonprofit in our country. So nationwide, and they have a ton of resources on this. And one of them is, one of those great resources is this packet on doing organic site prep for wildflower plantings. And they have a number of different methods within that packet. And the one that they like to promote as the most effective is the solarization process, where a clear piece of plastic, very thick plastic, is placed and down onto a site that has either been mowed if that's necessary, or so mowed if that's necessary. The plastic is placed down. Dirt is used, dug up on the sides to bury the edges, so we don't have the wind picking up the plastic over a long period of time. And this can be done either in the fall or in the spring. And then over the course of that following summer, the plastic heats up the soil underneath. So because it's clear, weed seeds can germinate and grow, but then the heat from the summer sun kills those weeds. And then that clears the way for the strip or the area, whatever shape you would want to make it, that clears the way for your native plant seeds to grow. So we take off that plastic the following fall, plant those seeds. They become, you know, they get what we call cold stratified during the winter time, and then the following spring they can start to grow without competing against those weeds. So really cool that that landowner, Cindy Hubbard at Hubbard Hills, wants to do that method of site preparation, and we're helping her do that.
Yeah, so just real quick before we wrap up, we have lots of information at our office over at VSN for folks that are interested in either organic or non-organic site prep methods. And we have info@valleystewardshipnetwork.org as our email to contact us if you're interested, or stop in our office here on Main Street and come get some more info if you think you might be interested in getting a native planting on your land.
Yeah, we have that seed fund that can help you get the seeds. So, pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks, Sky. It was
great. Yeah, thank you. This was great.
Yeah, thank you.